Let's take a very brief trip down the rabbit hole. There's glory for you. I don't know what you mean by glory, Alice said. Humpty Dumpty smiled contemptuously. Of course you don't, till I tell you. I meant there's a nice knockdown argument for you. But glory doesn't mean a nice knockdown argument, Alice objected. When I use a word, Humpty Dumpty said in a rather scornful tone, it means just what I choose it to mean, neither more nor less. The question is, said Alice, whether you can make words mean so many different things. The question is, said Humpty Dumpty, which is to be master? That's all. I think this little snippet from Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass has never been more relevant than it is in this era of certain prominent figures madly projecting their felonies and falsehoods on their opposition. Alice asks, how can you make words mean so many different things? And we, perhaps echoing Pontius Pilate's most intriguing line, may wonder, what is truth? We think we know, or at least we think we do when we hear outrageous lie after outrageous lie, never mind that millions of our fellow citizens seem to buy into those lies as gospel. Or do they? Maybe some of them, maybe even most of them, know they're hearing lies but just don't care. I don't really know, but rather than getting sucked into some kind of dispute whose resolution seems as elusive as when two third graders argue at recess, I think we'd all be better off we could pay more heed to Humpty Dumpty and his question, which is to be master? Who or what rules our hearts? That might lead to a more prosaic but still vital question. How can we defend what we know to be true when so many of the facts we've relied on for our whole lives are under assault, and when so many people out there blithely reject those facts? Like you, I imagine I have more questions than answers. But maybe there's hope to be found in our shared befuddlement. This month, the UU world is inviting us to think about resilience, to focus on our inner resources, on how to keep on keeping on. If you were to ask me how UU Saratoga can bounce back up, I'd cop to not having enough answers, yet. And if I'm really looking for truth here, I'd also have to own up to how discouraged I often feel, how tremulous in considering our uncertain future. But because I manage to get myself here regularly and share a common outlook with so many of you, I think I find most of my resilience in our resilience. I may have my doubts about how we're going to get to where we need to go, but against those doubts, I feel fortified by the trust I've come to have in all of you. That doesn't mean I might not think you're wrong about this or that, but I find it compelling to acknowledge that almost certainly we all mean well. I don't think any of us wakes up in the morning looking to tear things down or do harm. We may just need to take a breath, to be more open to each other in order to find some agreement about how best to build things up, to get out of our shells and into a more unified place. In the political world we face every day, where we may often feel ignored or disdained in asserting our values of empathy and interdependence, kindness, generosity, and justice, I think it's tempting to lose faith that those values hold sway in an environment where competing values of hatred, cruelty, greed, and tyranny seem to dominate the national conversation. In that rabbit hole, it's often hard to discern who or what holds sway, not only out there, but within as well, within our individual lives, within the beaten down faces sometimes staring at us in the mirror. I think most of us would scoff at any notion that we or anyone else are masters of our fate. We know better. We know there are a million contingencies out there, a million ways our plans can be disrupted, a million surprises and frustrations lying in wait to jump out and ambush us. I suspect the Jesus we hear about in the Bible, a Jesus I've come to regard not as an authoritarian tribalist, but as a source of great wisdom, had something like our quandary in mind when he made a radical assertion. Whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. That paradoxical perspective dismantles any conventional understanding of mastery. It invites us to embrace servanthood and sacrifice as paths to a different sort of achievement and success. It points us away from a place in which we sometimes find ourselves frustrated, disempowered, and bereft, to one where we feel connected. Since we seem to have found a relatively new fixation with pronouns, we call that bleak and prickly place the world of I, an illusory world that foments so much of what assails us and yet exists puzzlingly both within and miles apart from another world, the world of we. In our individual lives, I doubt there's anyone here who's not engaged in a daily Go to sleep, Mr. Freud. I doubt there's anyone here who's not engaged in a daily battle to seek some semblance of mastery, whether it's over our emotions, our circumstances, or the world around us. But that begs an existential question. What does it mean to be a master? And through the looking glass, the Red Queen declares that it takes all the running you can do to stay in the same place. An observation that relates to every one of us, from toddlers testing out newfound walking skills to old folks like many of us, trying to keep track of medicine cabinets overflowing with meds and supplements. It highlights a harsh but vital truth. Mastery often requires relentless effort. Ever since the coronary bypass surgery I had over 25 years ago, I try to exercise regularly just to keep myself alive and functioning. And to tell the truth, it's almost never easy or enjoyable. No matter how much I do it, and no matter how much I come up against the wish to go a little easier on myself. The need to be a good steward of my body is never far away, and it refuses to shut up. If I don't swim or hike or do something else that's physically and mentally taxing, I'll pay a price. I'll lose sleep, my BP will rise, my weight will too, with all sorts of secondary repercussions, and so on. I think there's a profound lesson in those little quotidian battles I fight with myself, battles that I'm pretty sure aren't all that different from yours. True mastery isn't so much about control or dominance. It's about understanding and acceptance and adaptation. And it's about oneness with something greater than ourselves. If that holds true for us in our individual lives, isn't it equally applicable in our communal life? What a challenging time we've faced and continue to face as a struggling congregation. Change is hard. Moving to a new building, working through unresolved feelings about disappointments we've felt deeply, choosing and eventually welcoming a new minister, doing something about our dwindling numbers, bolstering our funding, all this in a fraught time in a wider world, deeply troubled world, we never imagined we'd be facing. I think these are dilemmas that challenge our identities, our sense of stability, and our ability to adapt with grace, humor, and a sense of belonging. In a very real sense, they encapsulate what life teaches us, that mastery isn't about never being thrown for a loop or two, never feeling overwhelmed, but about how effectively we readjust our outlook. In the world of I, that's a tough one, as it is, I suppose, in the world of we. And yet, take a look around. If you can open your eyes, more importantly, if you can see through your heart, you're going to see something almost miraculous. You're going to see resilience personified. We are here. And if you can believe it, we're not going anywhere except onward. What a remarkable thing that is. We've endured so much. But like the little engine that could, we keep chugging away. We keep seeking communion with our better angels. I have a coda. Before I close, I have a thought to share with those beloveds who've become disheartened enough to leave our congregational family. I don't know how to reach most of those folks, but maybe you do. And if so, I implore you to pass on this message. Please come back. We miss you. Please give us another chance, not just for our sake, but for your own. Please take a moment to consider the wisdom of the 29th proverb in asserting, "Where there is no vision, the people perish." You may have forgotten that we share a vital vision here, one that I can only imagine you share, or you very likely would never have walked through our door. It's a vision of compassion and service and adherence to the truth that there are many things that transcend the limits of our subjective perspectives, spiritual gifts, which have allowed to punctuate our lives, enrich and empower us in unexpected ways. We're hardly the only community that pursues such a vision, but we are likely the one that you know, a community that seeks and respects what you bring to it, a community where you should never doubt that you belong, where you are meant to be recognized, to be seen and heard, if not always agreed with. If we have in our flawed humanity done something to alienate you or make you feel unwelcome, we ask your forgiveness and ask you to accept that we're all trying to do the best that we can. Few things would bring us greater joy than to welcome you back, a joy we sincerely believe that you will quickly come to share. May it be so.